creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Today on Culture Click, we present the Q&A session that followed the Clean Energy Forum, which took place November 13th at Winona State University. There were two featured speakers, Minnesota native and polar explorer Will Steger and Fresh Energy's J. Drake Hamilton. After a couple of questions from the audience, we'll go into our one-on-one interview where KQAL's Ryan Mangone questions Will Steger on how he became a polar explorer and why the issue of global warming is so important to today's culture. You're listening to Culture Click.
Go to a question and answer period for Jay, Will, and
Ellen Anderson.
Senator Ellen Anderson. I think this is the most important part of the evening. This is your chance to ask questions about what you've heard, ask questions about things you didn't hear, and learn some more.
Can I just introduce someone who's in the front row here first?
Former Public Utilities Commission Chair and former Minnesota State Senator Ellen Anderson, who wrote a number of the policies and passed them in this.
I want to thank both of you and Senator Anderson very much for being here. It's been very instructive. We here in Southeast Minnesota are facing our own part of the energy challenges for the country, and that we are dealing with the excavation of frac sand for hydraulic fracturing. It is a huge, huge problem. It's stressful for our environment, for our topography, for our water, for our lifestyle, our way of life. It's even worse in western Wisconsin at this point. My statement and then a question, my statement would be that I would implore Senator Anderson to please ask Governor Dayton to seriously consider a three-year moratorium statewide on fracking. Mining and transport and processing, any new or expanded activities. Some people are saying that because our frac sand mining can lower the cost of natural gas and produce more natural gas, it's better for us politically as a country, and it's also better for us because we're burning less coal, and we've seen that statistically. I'm wondering what your feelings are. Should we here in Wisconsin and southern Minnesota take a hit for the country, or how do you feel about this?
I feel pretty strongly about this, and so does everyone at Fresh Energy, that we need strong local control over not only frac sand mining here, but what we don't have here, which is hydraulic fracking in many other parts of the country, that those communities should have and exercise every ability to control and regulate water quality, air quality, land disruption, traffic, all kinds of the issues that may come up as a result of it. We think that's really important, and citizens should exercise and create every authority to do that. We don't think any part of the country should be a sacrifice zone for any kind of energy. We're not in favor of that. And we've got a long way to go, because for hydraulic fracking, we're not regulating it at all. And so, when, in fact, even the president said a few months ago that folks should have the right to know what gets injected in the wells, what he didn't say, but what many of you know, is that communities would get that right after it's happened. And so that, of course, is too late. So we need very strict regulations, and we need local communities weighing in to support the right of local communities to do this. We're so glad that the governor's special advisor is here, and that the governor is conducting with the Environmental Quality Board, I think that's right, environmental congresses, because this is an excellent way to bring this issue forward and know that you have many friends in areas that are not sand mining communities. Know that, and so that should be of use too.
I have recently installed a grid-tie solar array and did that with the help of a rebate
So that rebate program was so popular that when I contracted in October, the rebate that I was drawing from was actually for the following year, and they did not do the installation then until that following year. I've heard that this year Xcel is asking to be released from that rebate program, and I'm wondering if their effects are the Minnesota laws requiring them to continue that program. I think it's a very valuable one.
We agree that it's a very valuable program, and Fresh Energy advocated that. And we said, maybe that's not exactly the right program, but we need something equivalent, or we need to keep it going until we figure out what's a better program, because it's so popular and so effective. Governor Mark Dayton's Department of Commerce, which is our energy agency, they weighed in very heavily and quickly on that, and they said, no, we're not going to allow you. We're going to recommend to the Public Utility Commission or regulator that you not drop this program, but we're going to work with you. So keep it going, and we're going to work with you to see if we can tweak it or make it better. And actually, the way we think it needs to be tweaked is this. It's way too small. When we look at what Xcel Energy and all the other utilities say they're going to do for solar energy, if there's about this much solar electricity in the state now, this is how much they want in 10 years. And that is not acceptable. All of the utilities need to work harder and get huge amounts of solar electricity. And they need to take heart from places that are much cloudier, like Germany and New Jersey and Oregon. And they need to figure out how to make this work. And we need to demand it of them going forward.
It seems to me that there are a couple of contradictions or inconsistencies between what Mr. Steiger presented and what you're talking about. One of the things is that we could stop carbon emissions tomorrow completely, and we would still have a tremendous amount of change in climate and what's going on. And nothing that you've said presented anything that talked about how we deal with those changes that are going to happen tomorrow. Let me just finish a little bit. Another thing that you presented was, one of your statements was about electricity, that we're now at a point where we don't know where it's coming from. I'm not quite sure what you meant by that, but one of the reasons we don't know where it's coming from is this thing called the electric grid. And those of us in Wisconsin and some of us in Minnesota have had to deal with Xcel and a number of other electricity generators with this power line called CapEx 2020. And nothing that you've said shows anything about whether the electric grid, in terms of being interpreted in terms of climate change, ought to be redesigned, rethought of, changed.
Thank you very much. You raised really good points. There's a limit to what we can say in about 30 minutes each. I did mention that in the Twin Cities, I've been part of a number of groups that have worked on climate adaptation studies and thinking about what is it we need to adapt to. And so, and part of that is because exactly what you say, that because we in the United States have been putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for a lot longer than China, we're pretty responsible for how much is in there now, and a certain amount of additional climate change is baked into the system. It's baked into the system, so it will happen. But that is not a disaster, in many respects, not a disastrous level of climate change. And so we will need to do both. And so we'll need to reduce emissions, and we will need to adapt to the change. And actually, what I showed you the slide from John Holdren from Harvard, and he says the difference between the mitigation we do to slow down climate change to cut emissions and the adaptation we do, the difference between those is human suffering. So if we don't do enough of both of them, so we need to do both of them going forward. I agree with that. You know, this wasn't particularly a talk about the electricity grid, but that's something where, you know, I think that gets at why, in our experience, when we do polling and focus groups, most Americans do not know where their electricity comes from. Actually, we did in our world, there's kind of an infamous focus group we did of 50 and 60-year-old business owners, people you think might know better. And we were talking to them about something completely different, and we had the facilitator just ask a warm-up question, and she asked the group an open-ended question, where does your electricity come from? And that group said, and this was in 1999, this group said solar electricity. And this group was meeting in Bloomington, Minnesota. And so this was such a stunning answer to us, called on the facilitator to come back and chat with us. We said, you have to ask a follow-up question. Why do people think that? Because we have to understand this better. And they said, the group talked it over a little bit, and they said, because we've been hearing about solar electricity since the 1970s, and we just assumed government had made it happen. Now, there's a lot in that statement. Part of it is that what we've developed a system of centralized power plants that in many cases in Minnesota are well away from population centers. So on a daily basis, we do not see the burning of coal. We do not know. Did you know this about our biggest power plant in Minnesota? It burns 30,000 tons of coal a day. Not a year. That's not a typo. 30,000 tons of coal a day. But we don't know it. And in fact, I have been up on I-94 with people driving past our largest coal plant, and the people in the car with me do not know what it is. And they've been up and down that road all the time. So there's a lot that needs to be done with education and information going forward. I think the next question is up here.
I have a few questions for you. I have a few questions for you. One is, how do you encourage the investment in Minnesota in solar and wind energy? Where do you suppose that money should come from, and who's going to lead that campaign? And I have a couple more. Is it not true that most of the wind energy that's generated in Minnesota either goes out to the East Coast or at least towards Chicago? And I guess that's all my questions I have. I'm sorry.
That's fine. A lot of people have multiple questions. That's great. Most of the electricity generated in Minnesota stays in Minnesota. Some of it goes into Wisconsin. We are part of about a 10-state and province electricity grid, so there is movement of electrons across it. But, for example, our neighbors in North Dakota, a lot of their electricity comes into Minnesota. But generally, most of the electricity generated in Minnesota stays within Minnesota. I'm sorry, I forgot your first question. Was your name?
I actually remembered my other question, too. As far as the Minnesota legislature is concerned, how are we dealing with our inefficient grid? Because, that's a concern, I know.
And which inefficiencies are you concerned about?
Just as far as, how far we can broadcast all that energy we generate in one spot.
That's right. Well, all right, and I'll try to get to that, or I think we're a little short on time, but I want to get I remembered your first question, too.
How do you encourage the investment?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for reminding me. Well, I think I know Fresh Energy is part of a large collaboration of individuals and organizations and companies that are investigating what to do and what the barriers are to solar and how to get over them in Minnesota. So part of it is looking to what are the best models in other places. So, for instance, the idea of solar leasing. So really, only about 25% of homeowners have a rooftop that has the right solar exposure. So most of us can't really get that. But a lot of us would like to support it. So can we get involved in a solar leasing arrangement where we would be causing solar to be developed in a place where it's ideal locally, and then getting credit on our electric bills for that solar? So I think that's a very encouraging thing. This whole idea of a renewable energy standard, in many places they're talking about, and we're talking in Minnesota about a solar electricity standard. So a particular kind of carve out or an addition to the renewable energy standard specifically for solar. And then a lot of people who know solar know that probably in Minnesota you should start, before you start with photovoltaics electricity, you should maximize solar hot water and solar thermal, which are much more economic in much more places. And people tend to skip over that and get to the more sexy PV. But we should make sure we're maximizing our investment in that. I'll give you a sense of how Fresh Energy is directly involved. So I was talking about our largest power plant in Minnesota, which is the Sherco plant. Xcel calls it the workhorse of its system. We look at it and see 30,000 tons of coal a day and find that unacceptable. The oldest two units there were built in the 1970s, Sherco 1 and 2. Xcel just went through a resource planning process at the Public Utilities Commission. We were heavily involved in that. And we just got a decision on November 1st that Xcel is required to do a study with stakeholder input, including us and anyone else who wants to have input, and look at alternatives for retiring that Sherco coal facility and replacing it with clean, efficient energy. And so that is happening in the next 7 months. It's, the study's due on July 1st. So we will be involved in that study, and then we will be involved in commenting and picking that study apart, especially any parts that we don't like or don't think are strong enough going forward. But in part, it's going to be a little bit on a case-by-case basis. So you can look at alternatives like a solar electricity standard, and then you can look at, on a case-by-case, how are we going to remove these coal plants from the system and replace them with everything. And then you can look at removing the nuclear plants from the system and replacing them with cleaner, more efficient energy.
Well, thank you, everybody, for hanging in there. And thank you especially, Jay and Will, for answering so many questions.
My name is Will Seeger, and I'm an explorer and an educator. I've traveled in the polar regions and Arctic for about 50 years now.
How did you get started with traveling in the polar regions?
Well, I'm a Minnesota kid, and I always liked the winter, and my parents, big family, nine kids, so we had a lot of freedom. And I was interested in the outdoors, and particularly interested in winter because it was challenging. It was kind of perfect for me. You know, trying to sleep. It was a big deal when I was younger to sleep outside, like in October, November. And once I had a license when I was 16, 17, whenever it got really cold in northern Minnesota on the weekend, we would drive up there to sleep outside. And then I ended up moving to Ely, Minnesota. Then I started my own dog sledding and skiing business, and that's what got me into dogs. And then the dogs gave me the ability to travel further north.
So you got into a sort of a hobby, dog sledding, and then it kind of got into a bigger, larger scale?
No, dogs for me were business. I also live 3 miles from the nearest road, so they were my means of, in the wintertime, transporting in the supplies for the summer season. And then I had groups, 12, 14 groups a year, and I was a teacher there, and I also made a living, so that was my livelihood. Mm-hmm. And then gradually I got a really good dog team, and since I travel a lot in the Arctic by canoe and kayak, I was naturally interested in the further north. I started branching out my dogs first in Hudson Bay, and that eventually led me to the poles.
You must have a really strong bond with your dogs when you go on a journey like that. Is it kind of an interesting experience in that sense?
Yeah, the dogs, they're more than work animals. You depend on them. Yeah. You know, you really trust them, and you depend on them, and there's a strong bond now of trust, basically, because they depend on you and you depend on them. Mm-hmm. And they always give their 100%. They're amazing, amazing animals. And I really respect the dogs a lot.
So, moving more into the idea of climate change, why do you think that a lot of people seem to be opposed to the idea of climate change or don't want to believe that climate change even exists? Why do you think this happens?
Well, I think it's very simple. It's from the disinformation from the fossil fuel industry. They put up hundreds of millions of dollars in phony information and media, and well positioned. I mean, you see the ads all over the TV. And that's what we're fighting. And of course, I'm a science teacher, and I understand why some of the public are confused, because some of their networks that they're listening to are saying it's a hoax, it's a joke. That's their news source. That's where they get their information. Mm-hmm. And they're just getting the wrong information. Very unfortunate for our young kids that we have this denial.
Mm-hmm. I heard you say in your lecture that the solution is to move our economy away from the fossil fuel industry. Do you think we will be able to do this in the future?
Well, we're moving away from the fossil fuels already in the state of Minnesota. We're 13% wind and electricity. 7 years ago, we were 2%, and it's growing. Solar's starting to grow. It's going to be a big industry here in Minnesota. Minnesota, we don't have any fossil fuels, so we spend $20 billion a year in fossil fuels. Mm. That goes in from our pockets outside of the state. So we're going to start capturing a large portion of that economy once we get the support of the people and the support of our elected officials. It's a real win-win. It's probably be the biggest industry, I would say, in Minnesota.
So what would you say are some other large-scale solutions other than that kind of thing?
Well, equal to clean energy is conservation. Conservation is, 50% of pie. Mm-hmm. And conservation is where all the jobs are. And conservation could be anywhere from better building standards to conserve our energies, light bulbs and all sorts of technologies and pumps and that. All of this saves us money. I mean, conservation of energy means saving energy, saving us costs. And energy is going to rise. I mean, we all know that. Energy is going to become very, very expensive for us. And the more we can conserve, the more money we will save, and the less pollution we'll have, and also the more employment we'll have.
So on a smaller scale, what could an average, say, a Winona State College student do to help the issues?
Yeah, the average person in Winona or elsewhere, first of all, I think we should take on the responsibility of educating ourselves and getting our information from the right source. If we have a question, you have the web, and you can check the web out. You know, you want to have the correct science of anything, check out where the funding comes from, and then you'll find out if it's oil scientists that's paid or real scientists. So I think we need to educate ourselves. And you can get on the internet and find out 10 best ways of doing it, but we have to look at within our own life. You know, can we bike? Can we carpool? Can we drive less? Of saving energy in our lights. There's a lot, our food, buying local produce when we can, or local meats and so forth. This saves carbon, but it's also supporting our neighbors. And raising gardens, all sorts of, it's a community effort, actually. And I mean, I'm a product of the 60s and 70s, and back then we had the Back to the Earth movement. And my generation was really behind this. Unfortunately, some of us stayed with it, but not everybody did. But it was a really an interesting time, and then that same time is right here, but only this time around it's for real.
So we talked a little bit about catastrophic events like, you know, large-scale storms.
Yep.
You compared it to being of biblical proportions, it seems like, sometimes. And, you know, you can't really comprehend how terrible something like that is unless you experience it firsthand. Is there a way that we can get that message across to the general public of how serious and real that these issues are?
Well, unfortunately, the public is moved by events or high prices of gas, but fuel. I mean, I really believe it shouldn't be that way, and I think in Minnesota that we have the ability to really look at the facts in a common sense way. Energy and this new economy is for our own benefits, and we're really isolated now politically. We're polarized, and we fight with each other. But I believe in clean energy and climate. That's something that I think we all will get together on. That should not be in politics. That's just something of all of our interests, from young people to anyone that's trying to make a living. And so I think we will see in the next 4 years in the state, I think a lot more people are going to. So we don't have to be knocked on our back in order to catch on to it.
Right. Do you expect to see a lot more large-scale storms and events like this in the near future?
Unfortunately, we're going to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just statistical. I mean, it isn't like each year we're going to have massive storms, but we are. You know, the public is registering it. You can look at the statistics, not just in the United States, but globally. The rise of extreme weather events are going way up, along with the rise of insurance rates. Insurance rates in the extreme weather, they're pretty much hand in glove. And we'll see, definitely, because the atmosphere is warming, the ocean's warming. That gives us more water vapor and a more charged atmosphere, then, which gives us this extreme weather. So.
All right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the radio waves over Winona?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hope here. There's actually no excuse for putting our heads in the sand because, like I say, there's community effort, especially if you're a young person, this is your issue. And this is a great issue because you can get behind this and we can get the jobs going and we can get a lot of work done. And you can educate those that are older than you. It might be your parents or your elected officials. If they're not seeing this clear on, you really, especially if they're elected official or your parents or friends of your parents, take the message there. And I would say in that regard, it's very important to be tolerant. I mean, taking on, you know, a person because they don't have the same attitudes or the same belief systems, we still have to respect people, but we really have to look at this straight forward. But if you're young here, I would say, you know, band together, get this thing going. Vote. Vote's your best thing you can do. And talk to your elected officials. Make sure they know your name. And that way, if we all do this in Minnesota, man, we all move.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
A big thank you goes out to the Winona State University Department of Geoscience, the Will Steger Foundation, and Fresh Energy for the Clean Energy and Health Forum that was presented at Winona State University on Tuesday, November 13th in Stark Hall. More information on Will Steger, J. Drake Hamilton, and Fresh Energy can be found at fresh-energy.org. You've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.